The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball, and welcome into another edition of Clown Takes. And this week, we're not going after anybody who's on the other side of us. We're not going after any broadcasters or journalists or, you know, radio personalities. We're going after one of our own. And when you find out why, you'll see that it's, I think, pretty well deserved, but we'll get into it. I am your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter and potentially clown me at any point, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Join me on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
Jason, I have a smile on my face because an opportunity has presented itself. And I'm looking forward to it.
It should get pretty interesting. Yeah, you guys on the radio side or the listener side can't tell, but he has a ear-to-ear grin on his face right now. So definitely ready.
I love it.
Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
I am good. I'm wearing slides, not clown shoes, by the way. So, again, Cushman MLB, if you want to find me on Twitter, Bastards_Boston for the podcast account. Check out Instagram, our blog, et cetera, et cetera. So, I'll just get this started now. So, I had a tweet, and I'm the classic, you know, whether I agree with the tweet or not, I'm the spaghetti against the wall guy. And I think that's good for engagement and, you know, gets people, you know, interacting and stuff. So I kind of let Red Sox Nation on fire a little bit with this tweet. And before I do, just a disclaimer, I'm not an anti Tristan Casas guy. If we signed him to a deal tomorrow, that's fine. I'm good with that. So don't think I'm going there. But I proposed a trade scenario. And here's what I proposed. I should have had a second disclaimer, but I'll just get to that at the end. So the Blue Jays get Tristan Casas, Willy Abreu. Red Sox get Vladimir Guerrero. And in hindsight, I probably didn't need to put Abreu in that deal. You probably could have put a Nick York guy in there, just someone that's expendable. Blaze Jordan would potentially be a guy you could put in there, especially where he's a corner infielder like Guerrero. So a lot of people did have a problem with the Abreu thing. And, you know, in hindsight, I probably should have thought that through. The second part of this scenario, it's contingent on whether or not Vladimir Guerrero would sign a long-term deal. If that wouldn't happen, if Guerrero's camp would not agree with that, I would not make this trade. But the deal I threw out there, 10 years, $275 million, that would be a record contract for a first baseman, with Albert Pujols signing, I think it was 10 or 12 years at 240. Beyond that, I mean, first base, just you don't get a ton of massive deals. I mean, even Matt Olson's was 6 years, $168 million, somewhere in that neighborhood. Paul Goldschmidt never really, I think his longest deal was for 5 years. I forget what the money was on that, but first basemen just don't command that big of a haul. And it'll be interesting this winter when Alonso becomes a free agent. What's he going to pull? I think whatever the number is going to be a lot smaller than people might expect. But so that was the deal. And Red Sox Nation freaked out. And the tweet has 68,000 views, which is, for us, that's a big tweet. Lots of retweets as well. And so what I like about it and why I was willing to throw it out there is Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s Fenway Park numbers are insane. In 156 at-bats, that's about a third of a season. He's hitting .346 with a .428 on base, an OPS of, you know, 1050. He's hit 10 home runs, 37 ribbies, and he punished us pretty good this series. And you're left-handed heavy. You're going to have to make a painful trade. And it doesn't, of course, doesn't have to involve Tristan Casas, but it's going to be someone that you don't want to trade. And so in this example, I use Casas. Guerrero's a first baseman. And he's a right-handed at-bat, most importantly, so you can put him right in front of Devers or right after. The example I used was in front. Put him in between Duran and Devers. The other thing I love about Vladimir Guerrero is, like Tristan Casas, the dude barely ever strikes out. I think the last couple of seasons, he was just over 100 strikeouts. And in the last episode, we're talking about Ellie De La Cruz getting ready to blow past 200 at some point this season. So there's a lot to like about him. Could you argue that Casas' ceiling is higher? Yeah, you could. But for a generational talent like Guerrero, I'd be willing to make the deal. And again, in hindsight, I'm probably not putting Abreu in there for what it's worth. Go ahead, guys. Roast me.
So my favorite reply was from at Bob C underscore 38. Friends don't let friends do drugs. That made me laugh. So the first part of the take that I don't like is the idea that it would be contingent on Vlad signing a 10-year, $275 million. Now, the money could be 8 years, could be 12 years, could be 260, could be 320. It doesn't matter. In what world is John Henry going to agree to pay another player that much money based on what we know? So that in and of itself, the last time I called Terry, one of Terry's takes a clown take, he yelled at me. So I'm going to say it makes the tweet questionable because I don't want to get yelled at. Although I'm still probably going to get yelled at.
Where in the system? Go ahead. Yeah, keep going.
No. We can go into that before I move on to the second part of my take.
I'm just saying, I mean, who in your system, where's your right-handed at bat? Where are you getting that impact guy? I can't disagree that we're not targeting, you know, top-end guys, but we are going to be down to $153 million. That's all that's on the books next year. And
yeah, that this is more of just an ownership thing than anything else, because I think the Sox think they can get Tristan Casas for a Rafaela type deal, a Bello type deal, where they buy out years, give a player lifelong financial well-being without the risk of playing every single year through arbitration, potentially having an injury and not ever getting that life-altering amount of money. And I think that's where ownership is. And I think that's where they're going to be as Teal and Mayer come up through the system. If they start to play well, I would expect similar type deals because I think that's how they want to operate. Now, with that said, the only part of the tweet that I like, and it has nothing to do with the players, and you mentioned this, Terry, is sending a left-handed asset to get a right-handed asset back. It's necessary. We need to do it. Pitching's more important, so don't get me, you know, don't, I'm not saying don't do pitching. Pitching is necessary. We need a left-handed starter. Like, it's absolutely far and away the most important thing we need. But to give up what I think are two establishing big league players, because I consider both of them to be big leaguers and their career trajectory is upward, for a guy with 1 year of arbitration eligibility left, like, it doesn't make sense to me. So for that reason, I'd go to a different position. Like, for example, maybe shortstop, where Hamilton goes, a prospect goes, one of our expiring contracts goes, and you get a right-handed hitting up the middle defender. But this is too much. It's too much. Now, if Guerrero was signed to like a deal 2 or 3 years ago and it's a friendly deal, that changes the analysis tremendously. But ownership just isn't going to pay the guy. And so for me, that's what makes the tweet questionable. Yeah, and that's where I'll leave it for now.
Well, let me point out one other thing, and this was also something that was attractive to me. Rafi Devers' deal, which I've criticized and then in some ways I've praised, and one of the praises I give to it is it expires in his age 36 season. We're not paying him. This isn't going to be a Cabrera or Pujols deal beyond 40. I think Mookie's deal goes to 40. Xander Bogaerts' deal goes to 41. So we're only paying Devers until age 36. Vladimir Jr. is 25 right now. So very similar. You still got a lot of his prime left. And one of the two of them probably is a DH at some point. But I feel like you have a lot of shelf life on first baseman, you know, across the league. There's a lot of older, productive first basemen, you know, throughout much of the past decade. So that's just another reason why I would do it for Vladimir.
I mean, we could come up with a ton of examples, you know, Tomei, Goldschmidt, you know, I could go on and on. Guys that were able to extend their careers. The problem is his body type. Now, to his credit, he stayed on the field and he's not lean, but leaner than he was when he was younger. So he's clearly putting effort into taking care of himself, in my opinion. But his body type scares me, man. And I don't have like stints on the IL, games missed. I don't have any stats to back that up. It's more of just the eyeball test, where I don't trust the player beyond age 31. And when you have Devers, who is going to have to be a DH, we can all agree on that.
I would say eventually. Yeah.
Okay. So you are putting, it's like a game of chicken. If Vlad becomes somebody who's really only a DH, then you're stacking almost $600 million together heading towards each other. One of them's, the odds are that one of them is going to become a problem. Like it's too risky to me. It's just way too risky. And that's before you even talk about the trade going back to the Blue Jays. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
How is Tristan Casas going to age? I mean, he can't stay healthy when he's 25 and he's been injury prone throughout the minors. I mean, how is he going to age in his 30s?
That's a really good question. Highly questionable.
That's
a good question. And here's the thing with Casas is he takes care of himself. He puts a lot into his fitness, and yet he still breaks down. Now, the rib injury is a freak thing, right? So I don't rule out he has Trevor Story bad luck with his health. another guy who takes tremendous care of himself but just can't get healthy. You know, so
he's a future DH as well.
He probably is, but he's really young, and I think that's next contract. We'll worry about that. I don't think he's going to be a lifer Red Sox, but
before I kick it to Jason,
to be honest with you, the biggest issue I have with it is Willy or Abreu.
Yeah, I should have thought that one through a little bit better. And I would trade him, you know, maybe in a different deal under the right circumstances, but you could argue you might even be able to do a one for one here, Casas for Vladimir.
But again, you have to pay him. You have 1 year of controllability, and it's going to be expensive. That 1 year is going to be $25 million-ish.
Well, you would buy it out under this scenario. That would get bought out.
Yeah, but they're not. But God, Terry, give me a percentage that they give him a lucrative contract.
Oh, that's the biggest hurdle. I'm not disagreeing with that. There's not a lot of recent precedent here to do that. And let me say one thing, because Jason's got to get his take in. He debuted in 2019, so he only played 123 games, and it was late in the season. Not late, but, you know, probably late in the spring. 2020, he played 60 games. This is Vladimir again. 2021, 161 games. 2022, 160 games. Last season, 156 games. I mean, this is anti-Alex Cora. Alex Cora would mandate that he takes 12 games a year off, and he doesn't. So he's thick. So is Devers. But I don't know. I think he's going to have a better age 30 decade than Casas does. I would put money on that. Who plays more games?
I have a point. I'll write it down. Jason, go ahead.
So the most difficult part of this scenario is the, you know, it's not so much the trade, because you even said, like, you could probably swap out someone else apart from Abreu. Maybe you do Casas for him straight up. Maybe you pivot to, you know, you put together, like, a minor league package to get him. That's not the difficult part. You can probably find a package to get him. Now, will you have the best deal on the table compared to all the other teams in the league? Maybe not, because there are farm systems out there that are better than yours. And there are teams out there that are actually willing to trade their top five prospects. I don't think the Red Sox are. So, you know, when we were talking about this off the air, I mentioned to Terry, I said, you know, I would offer up a package that highlighted Roman Anthony at the top. And, you know, that would be the main piece going back, because of your quote unquote big three, which, you know how much I disdain that, that moniker for those guys. But between Teal, Mayer, and Anthony, he's the one I believe in the least. So I would strike while the iron's hot, offer him in the package to get Guerrero. So you can manufacture it that way. The thing for me that's difficult with this is the 10-year extension, because I just don't know. You can't predict health, and that's the hardest thing. I mean, same with Devers. When you sign him to that big contract, we're all glad that they did it, but we have no idea if Devers is going to stay healthy through the course of that. Right. It's, you know, you certainly hope that he does. He's kind of shown that generally he can. He gets nicked up here and there, but he's never had like a Chris Sale type of injury history or a Trevor Story one. But for all we know, Rafi Devers could hit age 29 and just start to randomly break down. You can't tell with some guys. And as Jeremy was pointing out, like, Casas takes care of himself, still gets hurt. Tyler O'Neill is a freaking Adonis, and he gets hurt all the time. So, and then there are some guys like Vlad Jr. who, yeah, he's a little more round. He has slimmed down a little bit the last couple of years, but he plays all the time. He doesn't miss games. And you look at his body type and you go, how is that possible? It feels like if he takes too big of a swing, he's going to pull something. But obviously he's in good shape despite whatever the appearance is. And you look at that type, that body type, it's like, is he going to be healthy and look like that going forward, or is he going to turn to Pablo Sandoval at some point? Like, you always have to worry about that. It's just, so you can't predict that, right? So there's always risk with, you know, signing a guy to a 10-year deal like that. And I agree with both of you. I don't think ownership would ever do it. I think they handed out the big contract to Devers, and they're like, we're done for a while. That's the last big contract you get out of us. It's going to be all these pre-arb deals. And, you know, you hear all the reports, like they haven't really made any headway with guys like Tanner Houck and Tristan Casas, probably because they're trying to lowball them. Like, I have to believe that's what's going on. Tony Maz was on the radio today, made a great point that all the young guys they've signed, Rafaela, Bayo, Garrett Whitlock, they took the money because they had to. I mean, Rafaela's not going to turn down that contract. He got a cup of coffee at the big league level, and the Red Sox wanted to give him an 8-year deal and give him like a huge pay raise. Of course he's going to take that. Brian Bayo, he had to take it because he probably knows, like, yeah, I'm really not that good. But okay, they want to give me a big contract and pay me like I'm a future number two starter or maybe future ace. I'll take it. And of course, Garrett Whitlock took it because, you know, his injury history and the whole fact that he got here via the Rule 5 because the Yankees gave up on him. Of course he takes that deal. Casas and Houck are going to be harder, you know, and I think it's because they're not really willing to show them the premier money that those guys are going to command. Tanner Houck wants Cy Young type of money. Tristan Casas wants cornerstone first base type of money. So I think the Red Sox are even hesitant to do that, let alone trade a prospect for Vlad Jr. and then pay him more than you would pay Casas and all those guys. I think they would absolutely not do it. Now, do I hate the idea? No. I hated the initial trade proposal of Casas and Abreu. I don't hate the idea. I like the idea of Vlad Jr. playing at Fenway Park and having that consistent right-handed power bat behind Rafael Devers for the next, for, you know, 7 to 10 years. They're both around the same age. You know, hopefully they both stay healthy. That could be your next Manny Ortiz type of thing. Maybe not to that level, but you can get close. And I think that's something that the Red Sox have been chasing for a long time. They thought they had it with Bogaerts and Devers, and they sort of did for a little bit, but Bogaerts was never really the big power threat. Mookie, they let him go too early. But, you know, in 2018, when they won, it wasn't a righty-lefty combo, but it was J.D. Martinez and Mookie Betts that were the best 1-2 punch offensively in baseball. So I think ever since then, they've been chasing that. So the idea of the trade, I like. It's just the actual terms that I disagree with. And personally, I would rather go for a guy like Vlad Jr. with some of your prospects, because as I keep telling people, and all the prospect humpers out there don't want to listen to it, you can't keep them all. Like, yes, it's really nice having a top farm system, and it's nice watching Marcelo Mayer draw walks in Portland. I know that really gets you going. You can't keep all of them. At some point, it's going to get too crowded, especially with a guy like Anthony, who's an outfielder. We've brought this up in the past and, you know, beaten it to death, but it's like at some point your outfield, you're going to run out of room, especially if you want to keep Jaron Duran, you want to keep Willier Abreu, you're stuck with Masataka Yoshida. You know, what's going to happen with Tyler O'Neill? Do you want to keep him after this year? Probably not, but you never know. So I would rather do it that way. I would go after a guy like Vlad Jr., but I would start with some of your prospects because you can't keep all of them. And I want to keep guys like Casas and Abreu because they're proven at the big league level. So I'm not willing to get rid of those guys, but some of your minor leaguers, sure. Yeah. And then, you know, if they want to sign them, if ownership is willing to give them that contract, by all means, pull the trigger and do it.
Real quick though, I mean, you can't, Casas has to go if you're bringing on Vlad. I mean, there's just no fit. You know,
the only way you could conceivably do it is if you believe that maybe Devers can stay at third base for a little bit longer and Vlad's your DH. Casas is your DH.
Honestly,
whoever you decide is better. But
being the guy that took all the bullets, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't. Casas would have to be in the deal. And again, I'll give Casas a 6 to 8 year deal right now in his age 23, age 24 season. I'm fine with that. I'm probably not going to want him, even if he's crushing it. I don't know if I'm going to want the Red Sox to re-up on him in his early 30s. I would probably hope that we've got, you know, prospects in the pipeline. But here's the other thing, too. Let's say Costas is the guy that goes. And this is all extremely hypothetical, and there's a fraction of a 1% chance this will happen. Who's to say that maybe Vlad becomes your DH and Devers goes to first base? I think Devers would probably play an adequate first base. So that's another backup, you know, idea if it needs to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't mind the idea of trying out Devers at first base. I sort of brought this up on our other show that the thing defensively he seems to be struggling with now is his range. So a lot of those hot shots to the corner are getting past him. And I at first base, that's kind of the only thing you really have to do is be able to snag, you know, those hot line drives, that those one hoppers. Those have been kind of eating Devers up at least this season. Now, can he improve on that if he's full-time first base? Yeah, probably. You know, they can probably coach it up, especially if he doesn't have to worry about, you know, chucking the ball across the diamond anymore. But I don't hate that idea either. I mean, I do get it, though. Like, I get the redundancy of Casas, Guerrero, Devers. You've got three guys really for two positions. I just would wonder if you could stretch it out with Devers a little bit longer. You know, maybe there's a chance that he figures it out a little bit more defensively, but most likely not. Yeah, that I would agree with.
So a couple points, and then my point that I wrote down. Number one, anytime you sign a long-term deal, there's the inherent risk of health. You sign up for it. I mean, it's part of the risk if you value the player and you value the potential output over the life of the contract. I mean, that just is what it is. I will never blame a young player buying out his arbitration years. Never. I have respect for those athletes that do what the union wants them to do, which is to play year by year, which basically is what Vlad's doing. You know, he's maximizing. I mean, he's making $20 million this year. He's going to make 25 next year. That's already the Rafaela deal in 2 years. And then he's going to get a huge contract and he's going to be free to sign with whoever he wants. Now, there's a risk when you do that. And it looks like it's going to pay off for him because he's playing 160 games a year. But if you're a young player and someone offers you 50, 60, 70 million to buy out those years and you have guaranteed money that is going to forever change your life no matter what happens, how can you ever blame someone for doing that? And it looks like Casas is leaning towards going the Vlad route. I don't blame him. I just think there's a little bit of crazy in those athletes. And look, I'm a gambler. I'm not saying I wouldn't do it any different way. I'm just saying I don't blame the athlete like Rafaela, like Bayo, that takes the money. I mean, that's just the way it is. Because at the end of the day, these guys are just human beings with potentially families and they want to have kids. And, you know, I mean, we're all working for something. Now, to my larger point, and this is the only thing that could potentially change the game with regards to ownership. Vlad is one of the faces of Major League Baseball. This year, he's on the cover for MLB The Show 2024. The reason why Shohei Ohtani got the contract he got is in part due to his incredible ability. He's the closest thing we're ever going to see to Babe Ruth. But the biggest reason why he got that money is because he is the face of baseball domestically and internationally. And Vlad's not close to that, but he's in the top five, and you can market the hell out of that guy. Okay, and especially with the following we have because of what David Ortiz did, there's value to ownership to driving marketing money into the program by getting that guy at a cost that they can line up, which may be more than we think. If their consulting firm they hire to evaluate this tells them, hey, he's worth about, you know, whatever it is, you know, 385 million over that period of time, you're actually going to make money. You know, that's the only thing I can think of, because that's the way John Henry and ownership thinks. Again, we're not a baseball team. We're an asset to John Henry. So that gives you a chance to think that this might be possible. Not on these terms. Terry's terms are ridiculous. I'm questionable. I told Terry I'd use the word questionable. So that's a factor. We haven't talked about it, but I do believe that's a factor. I don't know if you guys agree with me, but I mean, he's the top five face in the league, guys.
A couple of things of note, and I'm only finding out one of them right now, and it bums me out like really bad, and I'll get to that in a second. But as I've said on recent shows, I've been watching the away teams feed every time. I just can't stand O'Brien. And so I happened to be seeing some of the post game, and they interviewed Vladimir after game two. He had a big game, and he had an interpreter, of course. And one of the things he said was he loves Fenway Park. He loves hitting here. He loves the park dimensions, and he loves the vibe. And I just thought it was cool. You know, he's saying nice things about Boston. Now, the thing that bums me out is, it'll be the second part of this. A few years ago, he said he would never play for the Yankees, not even dead. And the reason for that is because apparently, and the quotes are out there, I'm not going to really get into them, but he thinks that the Yankees were kind of a little bit racist towards his dad during his playing days. And so his dad holds a grudge against them. And again, you can just Google that if you want to get further into it. But he said he'd never play for them. And then just a day ago, he rescinded that and he's willing to play for the Yankees. Now, here's what's interesting. The Yankees need a first baseman. Rizzo is out for a while and arguably never really showed up anyway. I mean, he's just been banged up the last couple of years. If the Yankees do this, I've got the Phillies right now. I'm probably flipping to the Yankees if they sign Vlad. Here's the other interesting thing. Here's what, if they trade for Vlad. Here's the interest.
You think the Phillies are in play?
I thought I said the Yankees. I said I've got the Phillies winning now. If the Yankees acquire Vlad, I'm flipping. That's what I should have said if I didn't say it. But here's what would make that extremely fascinating. They want to sign Soto, and it's not working out. And about a month ago, Hal Steinbrenner said, "Yeah, we would love to work out an extension with Soto." And then about 3 days went by, and then he announced that they're going to be cutting payroll next year. So I took that to mean they had a brief conversation with Boris. It didn't go well. Now they're cutting payroll. I could be wrong, but that's how it feels. Now, if you want to put Boris over the barrel after the worst winter he's had in his career as an agent, you bring in Vladimir Jr., and you put him at first base, and he's going to be controllable next season in ARB3. And what that says to Boris is, fine. You know, you don't want, you know, if Soto doesn't want to play here, we'll shift to Vladimir. That's fine. We'll just have another generational talent. So there could be some ulterior motives for the Yankees to bring in Vladimir. There's not a ton of momentum. I did see a couple articles speculating on whether it would be a fit. But as of right now, there's no momentum behind that. But Cashman's desperate. He needs a championship. And by trading for Soto, that kind of speaks to that desperation. So would he take it a step further and get Guerrero? I don't know. I would prefer the Red Sox do it. But again, that's not going to happen.
And it certainly seems a little bit like maybe Guerrero is auditioning himself for the Yankees with walking back his initial comments. And then I don't know when he cut the dreads, but he started the year with the long dreads and they're gone now.
And that was the middle of the Red Sox series.
Yeah. So that was recent then. So he's already kind of shaping up, you know, getting rid of the hair that they don't like. I think his dad was the first one to say too. He's like, well, you know, he really shouldn't have said those things that he would never play for the Yankees, because it is a business and he's got to be his own guy. So I think the Guerreros are kind of marketing themselves for if the Yankees want to trade for them. I don't think they'll do it, you know, but yeah, I agree. If he's going to get traded anywhere, I'd rather the Red Sox go in on that. But I don't know where he'll end up I mean, Toronto, I think, is on their way to, you know, blowing this thing up in a couple of weeks. But yeah, it's a tough one because he is such a good player and his power numbers are a little down this year, but man, him at Fenway Park for half the season, I mean, forget about it. He would just, he'd be wearing out that wall. So, and I certainly like him better as an option than Pete Alonso. Those rumors with linking him to the Red Sox do nothing for me. You know, 30-year-old guy who's, you know, his power numbers are down. All of his numbers are down. I'd rather have Guerrero than Pete Alonso, for damn sure.
Anyone from the Mets is tainted, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. So, any final thoughts on the Guerrero trade ideas and the tweet that sparked a million nations?
Let me guys ask you a quick question. For a lesser package, would you do it just to have him for a year and a half?
No, I'd keep the prospects and keep Casas. I would focus on another bold move. I was looking at outfielders, and I couldn't find a good fit for someone that we would trade. I was looking for an outfielder with maybe like 4 years of control. I looked at Brian Reynolds, but he's a lefty, and probably I don't think Pittsburgh would be motivated to move him.
Yeah, I mean, it would depend on what that lesser deal is, but if you're giving up prospects, like unless Yoshida's going in that deal and he can just slide right into that DH spot, but I doubt that's going to happen. So if it's just prospects for just his rental, I don't think I'd do it. No.
Yoshida's untradeable.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, you could eat like 80% of his deal, maybe, but I mean, that's Ruzny 2.0, unfortunately.
Yep. Yeah, certainly seems that way. So, might be a pipe dream, might be more of a reality than we think. We don't know. We got pretty much a month to find out because I think he's getting dealt this summer. So, we'll see where he ends up. We'll see if the Red Sox decide to jump into that or not, or if they're just going to stay clear and, you know, stick with their current plan. So certainly will be interesting to see what happens there. So with that, we will wrap up this episode of Clown Takes. We've got the Padres this weekend at Fenway, and the Weekend Crew will have you guys Monday morning to recap that series. So everyone have a good weekend. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.